Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Thursday, June 1st, 2017.
The United States will withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord.
This afternoon, Donald Trump announced his intention to pull the United States out of the Paris Climate Agreement, which was designed to curb carbon emissions. But according to Trump, it was designed to put the U.S. at an economic disadvantage. Trump.
So we're getting out, but we will start to negotiate, and we will see if we can make a deal that's fair. And if we can, that's great. And if we can't, that's fine. As president, I can put no other consideration before the well-being of American citizens. The Paris Climate Accord is simply the latest example of Washington entering into an agreement that disadvantages the United States to the exclusive benefit of other countries, leaving American workers, who I love, and taxpayers to absorb the cost in terms of lost jobs, lower wages, shuttered factories, and vastly diminished economic production.
Barack Obama, in a statement, said Trump's decision reflects the absence of American leadership. He said he's confident, nonetheless, that the U.S. cities and states and businesses will fill the void by taking the lead on protecting the climate. Obama says businesses have chosen a low-carbon future and are already investing heavily in renewable sources like wind and solar. But this isn't how Trump sees it.
In short, the agreement doesn't eliminate coal jobs. It just transfers those jobs out of America and the United States and ships them to foreign countries. This agreement is less about the climate and more about other countries gaining a financial advantage over the United States. The rest of the world applauded when we signed the Paris Agreement. They went wild. They were so happy. For the simple reason that it put our country, the United States of America, which we all love, at a very, very big economic disadvantage. A cynic would say the obvious reason for economic competitors and their wish to see us remain in the agreement is so that we continue to suffer this self-inflicted major economic wound. We would find it very hard to compete with other countries from other parts of the world. We have among the most abundant energy reserves on the planet, sufficient to lift millions of America's poorest workers out of poverty. Yet under this agreement, we are effectively putting these reserves under lock and key, taking away the great wealth of our nation. It's great wealth. It's phenomenal wealth. Not so long ago, we had no idea we had such wealth. And leaving millions and millions of families trapped in poverty and joblessness. The agreement is a massive redistribution of United States wealth to other countries. At 1% growth, renewable sources of energy can meet some of our domestic demand. But at 3 or 4% growth, which I expect, we need all forms of available American energy, or our country will be at grave risk of brownouts and blackouts. Our businesses will come to a halt in many cases. And the American family will suffer the consequences in the form of lost jobs and a very diminished quality of life. Even if the Paris Agreement were implemented in full, with total compliance from all nations, it is estimated it would only produce a 0.2 degree. Think of that. This much. Celsius reduction in global temperature by the year 2100. Tiny, tiny amount. In fact, 14 days of carbon emissions from China alone would wipe out the gains from America, and this is incredible statistic, would totally wipe out the gains from America's expected reductions in the year 2030, after we have had to spend billions and billions of dollars, lost jobs, closed factories, and suffered much higher energy costs for our businesses and for our homes. As the Wall Street Journal wrote this morning, the reality is that withdrawing is in America's economic interest and won't matter much to the climate. The United States under the Trump administration will continue to be the cleanest and most environmentally friendly country on earth. We'll be the cleanest. We're going to have the cleanest air. We're going to have the cleanest water. We will be environmentally friendly, but we're not going to put our businesses out of work. And we're not going to lose our jobs. We're going to grow. We're going to grow rapidly. And I think you just read, it just came out minutes ago, the Small Business Report. Small businesses, as of just now, are booming, hiring people. One of the best reports they've seen in many years. I'm willing to immediately work with Democratic leaders to either negotiate our way back into Paris under the terms that are fair to the United States and its workers, or to negotiate a new deal that protects our country and its taxpayers. So if the obstructionists want to get together with me, let's make them non-obstructionists. We will all sit down and we will get back into the deal and we'll make it good and we won't be closing up our factories and we won't be losing our jobs, and we'll sit down with the Democrats and all of the people that represent either the Paris Accord or something that we can do that's much better than the Paris Accord. And I think the people of our country will be thrilled, and I think then the people of the world will be thrilled. But until we do that, we're out of the agreement.
One of Obama's key advisors on the Paris Agreement, Brian Deese, tweeted out today that the U.S. joined the agreement on November 4th, 2016, and the earliest the U.S. can withdraw is November 4th, 2020, the day after the 2020 election. Paris will be on the ballot, Deese tweeted. Withdrawing from the pact fulfills a promise Trump made as a candidate. It signals an America doing it alone attitude. Meanwhile, while Donald Trump is turning his back on the Paris Climate Accord, in the Senate, Jeff Merkley, Bernie Sanders, and Ed Markey have introduced the 100 by 50 Act. It aims to build a 100% renewable energy economy by 2050. Our revolution has a petition in support of the bill. They say we have the technology, the workforce, and the need to transition our energy grid off fossil fuels to 100% sustainability as soon as possible. Go to Our Revolution for more. Meanwhile, Food and Water Watch has been organizing in our own backyard. They've been holding Resist Trump strategy sessions and gatherings to try and force change at both the federal and state level. Alex Beecham is the Northwest Regional Director at Food and Water Watch.
For us, the upside of the Trump phenomenon is that there's just more people at these meetings, there's more people in the streets, there's more people taking political action. So that's exciting, right? And, you know, it's meaningful. There's a real role for New York to play in the resistance. So, you know, Senator Schumer is the minority leader. A lot of these fights are going to be around the budget and exactly how much is cut from critical programs, from the EPA in general, but from our kind of landmark environmental protections. He can stop that, right? The Senate can stop those cuts. And so New Yorkers have an enormous role to play. We have to keep the pressure on Senator Schumer to stop these cuts and to kind of resist the Trump agenda in general. And then the other thing I'd say is, you know, while we're resisting at the federal level, New York's also one of the few places where you can make real progressive change and real environmental change at the state level. And so we've got to do that. So you can't play offense or defense. We have to play both, right? You've got to defend everything at the federal level and really work at the state level to put pressure on Governor Cuomo and our state leaders to make progress, because we can't wait on climate change. We can't wait 4 years or 8 years. So we've got to start it right now. The Democrats are pretty united against most of Trump's cuts, and specifically the environmental ones. So we have to keep fighting. It's going to be a months-long process, but we'll keep the pressure on, and I think we can win that. And then at the state level, you know, we've already won a number of really huge things, from the ban on fracking a couple of years ago, to the defeat of a number of pipelines, to the defeat of the Seneca Lake frack gas storage facility just a couple of weeks back. So we're making progress. The problem is it's not fast enough and it's not enough. So we've got to ramp it up at the state level, and I'm confident we can do it. I would say get active. So go to foodandwaterwatch.org. Come to our meetings. If you're not active with us, get active with somebody else, because really the way we're going to fight back, it's going to be person by person, just ordinary New Yorkers coming together. So people should do it.
Greta Zorro is also with Food and Water. She says they are organizing to resist against Trump's extreme anti-environmental agenda.
His plans to promote more fracking, more fossil fuel use, to privatize our water systems, to sell our water to Wall Street. So we're here protesting Trump's anti-environmental agenda and making plans about how we can make real progress here in New York State for safe. So we have three campaigns. One is to oppose all fossil fuel infrastructure here in New York, as well as all nuclear energy. So even though we banned fracking in New York, we're still seeing an onslaught of pipelines, power plants, compressor stations, and other fracking infrastructure traversing through our state. So we're calling on Governor Cuomo to complete the fracking ban by banning all fossil fuel infrastructure, such as the proposed Pilgrim pipelines, and to stop promoting nuclear power in our state. As you might have heard, Governor Cuomo is propping up three nuclear power plants with our money, $7.6 billion of our money, to prop up these nuclear power plants. So we're calling on him to stop nuclear power, to stop fossil fuel uses, and transition to real renewable energy, solar and wind.
Activists say Governor Cuomo's nuclear power bailout to save old power plants through an increase in taxpayers' utility bills is just plain wrong. It's estimated that the tax will cost New Yorkers nearly $8 billion, money which goes to Exelon, a Chicago-based Fortune 100 company with annual revenues over $34 billion. And right now, New Yorkers are standing up against Trump's exit from the Paris Climate Agreement. There's a rally at Foley Square and a march to City Hall calling on local leaders to take action. Organizers at the World Can't Wait and 350.org say, let's take our outrage and channel it into positive change here in New York, where we know we can move Governor Cuomo, Mayor de Blasio, Controller Stringer, and other elected officials to action. That's right now at Foley Square in Manhattan, and then on to City Hall. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org.
One curse power!
You get power!
One curse power!
You get power!
There was a cause for celebration this week with the signing of the Fast Food and Low-Wage Workers Empowerment legislation put forth by the New York City Council, signed by Mayor Bill de Blasio. Two of the bills from Councilmember Corey Johnson protect workers from predatory scheduling practices, which take advantage of employees with no regard to their personal or financial needs.
For single parents, a day or two isn't always enough time to find or cancel a babysitter. For those with more than one job, as many of the hardworking individuals who this legislation will affect, 1 or 2 days isn't enough to change their schedule to accommodate an additional shift. If more than 2 days notice isn't too much to ask for an employee, it certainly isn't too much to ask for from an employer. Secondly, Introduction 1388 would ban fast food establishments from scheduling their employees to clopen, work back-to-back shifts, the first to close the restaurant and the second person to open it in the morning. Like the previous bill, 1388 asks employers to show their workers a basic level of respect by letting them rest.
Councilmember Johnson says tucking a child in at night or getting them ready for school in the morning shouldn't be sacrificed by a few hours of sleep between your shifts. The other bills in the Fair Work Week legislation sponsored by Councilmember Brad Lander.
The two bills that I'm sponsoring, Intro 1396A, requires that fast food employers provide 2 weeks advance notice of their schedule to all workers in fast food restaurants, all shift workers. And if it's changed, if the schedule is changed after that, there's a schedule change premium that those workers have to get. More if shifts are canceled than added, and more as the date of cancellation gets closer to the shift, in a way that guarantees that those schedules will be real. And Intro 1395A gives fast food workers a path to more hours, and if they want them, to full-time hours, by requiring that before employers post to hire a new employee, that they offer those hours, those shifts, to their existing employees. So you can't get stuck, as so many fast food workers are, in an involuntary part-time job where you can't get enough hours to pay your bills. Because together, $15 an hour, 2 weeks advance notice, a pathway to a full-time job, and the opportunity to organize with your coworkers, that is a way that fast food workers could still, even in this city, have a stable life.
Lander says with the Trump administration working to undermine the progress we've made on workers' rights and setting an anti-worker agenda, it's instrumental that we continue to protect all working New Yorkers.
I've lived and worked in Brooklyn, and I'm a father of a 4-year-old daughter. I have worked at McDonald's, Wendy's, Popeyes, and now I work in Dunkin' Donuts, where I clean and make the donuts and coffee.
Pierre Moutavier has been working in the fast food industry for more than 4 years.
These laws will help make huge improvement in my life and the life of tens of thousands of other fast food workers. I work at Dunkin' Donuts with no set schedule. I get a call from the manager to tell me when to come in. Often it's the same day that he calls me. And sometimes I have to call the store or go in to see if I'm in the schedule. I only get a few days of work a week, so I don't make enough to survive in this city. I rely on food stamp, and I'm currently living in a shelter. My daughter lives with a mom, and it is almost impossible for me to provide any support for her because I'm struggling just to provide for myself. Often I have to choose between basic necessities, like giving up my phone bills so I can pay for weekly MetroCard because I don't have enough money for both. My unpredictable schedule, I've even made it impossible to get a second job. Just setting up interviews is difficult because sometimes I have to cancel them when I get a call to work at Dunkin' Donuts. It's hard to say no to a last-minute shift when it's the only income I have coming in.
When we fight, we win, say workers and Hector Figueroa, president of 32BJSEIU. He reminds workers at City Hall this week that the fight for 15 started in New York.
This is where it was born, out of the courage of fast food workers who took a step of going on strike, and everybody was saying that they were out of their mind demanding 15, and now 22 million workers plus have won wage increases around the country.
Yes!
But the fight is not just for fast food workers or for retail workers, who are, both of them, so integral part of our city's economy. It is for all workers. It is for all low-wage workers. It is for everybody. Because when we leave the floor, everyone can reach the ceiling. This is to leave everyone who works in this city and give an example of what is possible when workers come together around the country. So leading us in this vision of economic justice and empowerment with the fast food workers, we have broken new ground in the city of New York by winning not only a Fair Work Week, but also winning the vehicle, the path, for them to have a stronger voice, to educate themselves, to understand what their rights are.
New York City's Fair Week legislation goes into effect in 6 months. listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio, WBAI in New York. Jimmy Breslin was honored this week on 42nd Street between 2nd and 3rd Avenues. That's where newspaper columnist and author Jimmy Breslin, who died in March at the age of 88, worked at the Daily News. The sign is on the block of the former home of the News, the newspaper where Breslin worked the longest. Breslin's son, Kevin Breslin.
On behalf of all of our family, I'd like to thank Mayor de Blasio for adding our father, Jimmy Breslin, to the illustrious list of the great of the greats who have had a street naming in this city. No other city in the world could pair a New York writer from Richmond Hill, Queens, with the great Israeli leader Yitzhak Rabin and the great humanitarian Nelson Mandela, a Pulitzer Prize winner and Nobel Peace Prize winner so close on lampposts in our city. And that's the magic of New York. My father said, rage is the only quality which has kept me or anybody I have ever studied writing columns for newspapers. Well, the great newspapers that he wrote for, the Long Island Press, the Journal American, the Herald Tribune, are long, long gone, including the Daily News across the street where he received his Pulitzer Prize is no longer on this street. The city just changes and it moves forward. My father often intoned, fame is fleeting. It comes fast and goes faster. However, real news, as the mayor said, not fake news, and the power of observation will never cease in this city. New Yorkers and their stories, they mattered monumentally to our father as he pounded away all his beautiful, funny, powerful, and often poetic ways for 80-some-odd years. This prominent street sign behind us here will have a great lasting impact for some young person who wonders, who is Jimmy Breslin? They'll maybe look him up, Google him, and then out of nowhere, with complete and total energy, they'll create their own wonders with verbs as he did in this city. He'd proudly smile because he'd often tell me, oh, they're out there. There's great minds coming. They're young. Look out. They'll come. Just watch. They'll be big. And I love that about them. He was always optimistic for the future, especially for anyone young. So our family thanks Mayor de Blasio and his outstanding staff, Emma Wolf and Marco Carrion, for this wonderful honor. And he would often growl to me, if you're looking for me, dial 1-800-HEAVENS. Thank you.
New York Senator Liz Krueger, a close friend of Ronnie Eldridge and Jimmy Breslin.
I've known Jimmy and Ronnie pretty much, feel like, my whole life. Ronnie went to college with my parents. And before I was an elected official, I did advocacy around government benefits for low-income people. And the most interesting phone calls I ever got in my life were the 11 p.m. phone calls from Jimmy Breslin saying, so I just spent the day at the housing court, or I just spent the day at a welfare center, or I just spent the day at the homeless intake shelter center. I have to write, and my deadline is 7 a.m. I need you to stay up with me and explain to me what the hell is going on here. And I would know I was going to spend several hours on that phone call with Jimmy Breslin, and he was going to write something that would get into the hearts and minds of New Yorkers better than any advocacy or policy analysis that I and my colleagues could ever do. Because he had an ability to translate big, complex, sometimes ugly government experiences into just the real life, this is it, people, we have to do something, stories that he was so famous for. So to all the Breslin and Eldridge family who's here, what a gift you gave the city over and over again, and they don't make them like that anymore. So I'm delighted to see Jimmy Breslin's name up on any plaque anywhere in New York City, and people should never forget what he did. Thank you.
And here is council member Danny Drum.
All the way from Queens. But I came today as really mostly a friend of the family, because I also had the opportunity to actually hire Deirdre Breslin, and she worked in my office. And I've gotten to know Kevin and James very, very well, and of course, Ronnie also. So I wanted to be here for that reason. But, you know, as one of the first openly LGBT people to be elected in Queens, Jimmy Breslin was also an LGBT activist. And he was one of the very first people to come out and to support our community. And I had the opportunity to speak to Jimmy in 1983 when we were trying to get a gay rights bill passed in the city council. And the Catholic Church and the Salvation Army was up in arms about it. I happened to have been a director of a daycare center in Harlem at that time, and Jimmy was saying, you know, look, there's a guy who's doing this work up in Harlem, working with young people, and he's not a threat to anyone at all. So I wanted to say thank you, Mr. Mayor, for putting this sign up, and it will be a reminder to everyone, especially to young people, about all the values that Jimmy Breslin stood for. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mayor Bill de Blasio said Jimmy Breslin told stories with a vivid eye for detail and in the inimitable voice of a true New Yorker.
As we go marching, marching in the beauty of the day, a million darkened kitchens, a thousand mill lofts gray, are touched with all the radiance that a sudden sun discloses. For the people hear us singing, bread and roses, bread and roses.
And that's the WBAI Evening News for Thursday, June 1st, 2017. The news was produced with Ekeem Killick and Reggie Johnson. And we're going out with Joan Baez and Mimi Farina with Bread and Roses. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.
Our life shall not be sweated from birth until life closes. Hearts starve as well as bodies. Give us bread, but give us roses. As we go marching, marching, unnumbered women dead go crying through our singing their ancient call for bread. Small art and love and beauty, their drudging spirits new. Yes, it is bread we fight for, but we fight for roses too. As we go marching, marching, we bring the greater days. The rising of the women means the rising of the race. No more the drudge and idler tend that toil where one reposes, but a sharing of life's glories, bread and roses.